Good morning, everybody. This is Will Richardson in San Francisco. Welcome to the 10X podcast. And today I'm excited to be with my friend Ben Bashir, owner of a very successful wealth management firm in Ohio. And Ben, we're going to talk about some great stuff about thinking differently and how to be abundant and do some amazing stuff, man. So I'm excited to be here with you.
Will, I'm looking forward to it, my friend. Thank you for having me.
Definitely. You know, as I think about you, you're somebody who thinks differently than others in our world. And I'm curious about, like, what do you do to get these kinds of out of the box thinking and ideas that have helped you really reshape how our business works?
You know, well, I think for all of us, there is so much information out there right now. I think it's an exciting time to be alive. You think about AI, you think about technology. But one thing I love, I use an app called Blinkist. I don't know if you use that app, but it gives you, I was not a great student in high school, but it gives you basically the cliff notes of every business book that's ever been written, and really a lot of non-business books too. But I've found that if you read a book, you usually have like one or two takeaways that, like, once you've gotten that takeaway, that was all that was meant to come out of that book for you. And what I like about Blinkist is in about 10 minutes, you can get the essence of a book. And so I can read 20 or 30 books a month in the same amount of time another person would read one book a month, not because I'm a fast reader. I'm actually a slow reader. My lips move when I read, so I'm very slow. But I love technology like that can allow you to get, like, the best insight from somebody. And you realize, like, how many parallels there are in different industries. You know, you think about some of Steve Jobs stuff about you start with the customer and then you work your way backwards. And you think about, like, there's takeaways from that in every single industry out there. I think I got the feedback yesterday from one of my coaches. He said, "You've been talking too much about your team and too little about the customer. You need to think about what the customer needs and work yourself backwards." And I just think there's so many different takeaways that I think sometimes when we only try to learn from our own industry, we end up missing it because we get caught in the malaise of all of the different industry acronyms versus the fresh ideas that come from thinking differently. So that would be one idea on my end.
I actually got Blinkist because of you. Yeah, I got in there and it's really great. And you can, I think it's such a good point. I mean, I like to read books, but it takes a long time. Sometimes you forget about it for a while and you just get the core idea. And it seems to me you're very good at implementing things too. Like you get an idea and you put it in motion pretty quickly.
Yeah, for me, I think the key is, like, if you think about it, like a matrix in your head is like, what is not hard to implement and what will make money for your firm. And I always like things that are up and to the right on that matrix. Yeah. And I think the key thing for me, because I do love change and do love implementing new things, the key thing for me is, like, picking the ideas that are hard and not profitable and avoiding those like the plague, you know? And I think sometimes that's a challenge. And sometimes your intuition's wrong on what will work, which also happens all the time. But we try a lot of stuff and we try a lot of stuff and we are quick to quit something if it's not working. And that's worked well for us, is not falling in love with any idea.
That's a great point. So you're testing it and then you get feedback from clients and you get a sense whether it's working or not that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how well, you know, the system and capitalism works. If you really think about it, it's like, you know, the market will tell you what they like. And we've had different services that we thought clients would love. And nobody seemed to be interested in it. And we've had services that we thought the clients weren't going to think that was that big of a deal that they loved and they told us was valuable. You know, it's just interesting in any industry. You know, I would think in the financial services industry, you know, we would think the big thing that would be important to clients is their review meeting, or if you're a doctor, to use a parallel, your annual physical. But when you poll clients and you ask clients, they say the most important thing to me is being able to get a hold of you when I have a problem. You know, and like you're like, okay, that wouldn't have been intuitive. We have all of these systems designed to make sure we have a great review process. But what they've said is, I just want to get a hold of somebody that can help me when I have an issue that comes up. I like all the other stuff you do. But I think in all industries, we have an opportunity to just like listen to like what's actually important to the client, not what we think is important to the client. And it's not always what we think. It's not always intuitive. That seems like so easy. I want somebody that will pick up the phone when I call and will be around to deal with the problem I'm having at that time. That was the number one thing they said, and it wasn't what I was thinking they would say.
How do you get that information from people?
You know, we have we've been through this a couple times where we've just added it as a feedback session at the end of meetings. There are things that don't work that well in a survey, and what we've done anytime we've wanted to collect information is we've said, hey, for the next month and every meeting we're in, we're going to ask this question at the end of the meeting. And sometimes the question will be as simple as, what do we do that you value? And then we went through another phase of like, what do we wish you would do that we're not doing? I find that question you don't always get good answers to, but when you do get a good answer, it's a really good answer. And you just realize like how often what they want is something like really simple. You know, it's like, I wish that you would do X. And I could go down that rabbit hole of what X is, but sometimes X is a thing that would be so easy for us that it's easy to surprise and delight them because what they want sometimes is pretty simple.
Well, that, you know, that idea that the coach said, it's like, hey, you need to think about or talk about the client more. So how does that translate? If you think about, like, are you able to put yourself in their seat, and then like the example of the team and how the team would be able to answer the phone? I mean, that might be part of it, right? Because that's connecting those two things.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you think about the average client and you think all about their experience, and this could be for any industry, but how complicated is it to open an account? How well do they get along with their advisor? What kind of advice are they getting? How do they interact with your team? How long does it take to get a hold of somebody? It's amazing how often that all of those things have a touch point, and there's usually a team member that is in charge of that touch point. And I think also when you bring it back to why it helps the client live a better life, it doesn't seem to your team like you're just inventing a new bureaucratic process. It seems to your team like this is, you know, one of our missions of our organization is, if you look at the way we look at life, we want to help clients get the most out of not only their money, but their life. And when you think about that mission, and you think about when we do our job, we change the world for good. I think when we're experiencing that kind of impact with clients, and we can bring the team members into that kind of impact, it really highlights that a call return the same day is not that there's this bureaucratic system watching you. It allows clients to live their best life. And so I think when we make things about the client, I think it's more inspiring for everybody involved, including me, for sure.
No, that makes sense. And you know, one thing I've noticed about you is that you think abundantly, you think big, and you find all kinds of ways to collaborate. And I know that sometimes when people are in business, they think of others in similar businesses as competition, but that's not how you think about it. You think differently about it. Could you tell us about your mindset on that?
You know what I think is interesting is, you know, no matter what industry you're in, and there are some industries that are more competitive than others, right? Every industry is a little bit different. But I find that in our market, in the markets we're in, maybe one out of 100 times you might be bumping into and competing with somebody you know. And so maybe there's going to be an opportunity you compete with them. But what I've found is most people hold all of this stuff in, hold their knowledge in, hold what they know. They don't share. They're not in any industry study groups for that 1% of the time that they can run into them and losing and them in competition, when 99% of the opportunity is what you can learn from each other. And so what I've learned in our markets is a couple of things is just how much I can learn from people that are in our industry. And then also what I've realized, part of our strategy is partnering with other firms in our industry. We are growing nationally. We're in four cities right now. And so I think there's so much more we can learn when we think abundantly in partnership than that threat that somebody's going to get an idea and put me out of business. It's just incredibly unlikely. I mean, if my business is so fickle that by sharing an idea, somebody else can threaten the validity of my business, it probably wasn't that good of a business in the first place, right?
Totally makes sense. I mean, it's a very abundant mindset, and it's one thing I know about you is you're always thinking about growing. You're thinking about what's next. So, how do you identify these opportunities? As you, I know you're in San Francisco now and other cities. Like, how do you assess that? Like, there must be something you're looking for in a way of, is it someone who has a skill set that's a little different, or what are some of the things you look for when you do that?
You know, there's a couple of things we look for. One is that the advisors are like-minded to us. And so when we're looking for partnerships, we are looking for partnerships with people that are like-minded. We have a culture code we use internally that walks through what is the culture that we are going to have. We also have a belief internally that there are five kinds of wealth that every human being has. We all as humans have spiritual wealth. If you're a faith person, that could be your relationship with your maker. If you're not a faith person, that could simply be your purpose. We all have relational wealth. We all know a lot of people that have a lot of real wealth, but not relational wealth, and their life's not that great. We have physical wealth. How you use your time, the kind of shape you're in, the margin you have in your life. We have intellectual wealth, and then we all have financial wealth. And anybody that's a good partner for our firm believes in that breadth of wealth we all have, because I don't want to just make somebody the richest person in the graveyard at the end of their life that didn't have a good life, a full life, a rich life beyond money. And so first off, they are a fit with our culture. They're a fit with the way we think about wealth. Secondarily, they're like-minded in the way they think about the market. Our main markets are Fortune 500 executives and entrepreneurs. So they need to have like-mindedness in the kinds of markets we're going after. And then last, when we look at how they are, I think they need to have a commonality on how they treat people and how they handle money. And a lot of times when you talk to somebody and they say, you know what, I've just never been able to keep a team member for more than 2 years, they're probably not a fit for us. Also an abundance on how they think about money. And then there's a bunch of other internal metrics on how we think of who's a good fit. There's certainly some financial modeling there, but we start with the non-financial stuff. You know, the reality is you ought to be eliminating on non-financial, and then that ought to be first, and then the financial side ought to be second. I think most firms pick who's most profitable, and then they rationalize why the fact that well, they're not that bad of a person. I think you ought to do it the other way around, so you don't even get to the finances until you figure out if their personality fit.
Oh, that's good. Your business name, Live Well Capital. That's such a great name. It's like when I first saw it, I was like, oh man, I wish I had thought of that. It's so good. And it's you, right? And what you shared, it's like, I think in our world it tends to be, hey, let's help that guy stay, let's help him be the richest person. Let's help her be the richest person in the graveyard, right? Don't ever enjoy anything. But You're inspiring people to enjoy their lives now, it sounds like.
Yeah, if you look at my business partner Brad encouraged me to read a book a couple of years ago called Die with Zero. I don't know if you've read Bill Perkins' book.
I've heard it again.
If you haven't read it, you can blink it to just get the essence. But Bill's point in the book was really interesting in the fact that like he has a bunch of mental models he works through, but he challenges the status quo. He talks about like avoiding bucket lists, but think about time buckets. He's making a point that like if everything you do is about delayed gratification in your life, delayed gratification to the extreme is no gratification. And he talks about you have executives and entrepreneurs that are so accustomed to running for the cheese on that wheel that eventually you take the cheese away and they just run out of habit and they don't even remember why they're running anymore. They don't even remember what their goals were. And so he talks about setting up time buckets for each part of your life of what do I want to do in the next 5 years? What do I want to do between 60 and 65? What do I want to do in my 80s? And he was talking about like, life's like Tetris. You got to get the order right. And he was like, you probably can't go heli skiing at 90, even if you have a pile of cash. That's probably for the 45 time bucket. And I think a lot of times when you start talking with clients about what is the purpose of wealth, how are you going to live in the most fulfilling way? He talks about memory dividends, which are like the opposite of the way some financial advisors think. He talks about the earlier in life you do something, you get to remember that experience and you get a dividend out of it. And so you have to balance, as finance people, you tend to think you have to do it later, delayed gratification, so compound interest can take it take its part. But he said there's a counterpoint to that if you don't have experiences, you don't get the benefit of that memory dividend. And so I think about when you really get clear about who your business serves, our business should serve people that want to get the most out of life. And if people don't want to get the most out of their life, I want our message to be almost offensive to them. So they just run away. And so I think if your business has the right message in any industry, it's like a magnet that's going to attract the right people and potentially repel the wrong people. And I think that's what great messaging does, hopefully. And that's what we're hoping to do with Level.
Well, it's really interesting you say that. So you're saying, look, we don't want everybody. We don't want everybody as partners. We don't want everybody as clients. And like that probably was a shift. I think a lot of business owners, at least initially, it's like, hey, if they can write a check, they can be a client, right? So you might have had that in the beginning, but like, how did you make that shift of let's say an example might be walking away from an opportunity where somebody is willing to be a client and be profitable, but it's not a good fit for the person reasons or, some other factor.
I think everybody that's an entrepreneur, Will, you included, me included, everybody, we have PTSD from the beginning of starting our business where like you're always playing this game in your head of like, how many more payrolls can I make before I run out of money? Right. Like you would get some revenue and then you'd think, okay, I can last three payrolls before I run out of money. Right. We all have this PTSD of how we thought when we were starting our business. And I think sometimes like it's 5, 10, 15, 20 years later, and we're still living with that fear. We're still living with like, if this person doesn't become a client, we're out of business. And I think in some ways that fear probably was primal. It kept us from getting eaten in the jungle early on. But in the fact that like now, if you have a thriving business, I find that that fear is causing people to make really dumb decisions all the time because we're living in that scarcity mindset of like, we're not going to make it if this person doesn't become a client. And I think we all have clients in any industry. This is not just for financial services where they don't value our services. Everything's kind of about price. And when you go to have that meeting, I find when somebody doesn't value our firm, you accidentally, we spend all of our time when we're preparing for that meeting defending the work we've done. And so you look and say, well, how do we prove that we did a good job for them? And then you're going back and saying, oh, we made this, we did this on the right day, and we did this, and we did this tax thing, and we did this. And what I find is when somebody doesn't value you, what you end up doing is spending all your time proving why you're a good value and none of your time proactively planning. And so we do the best work, ironically, for people that trust us the most. And I almost think every business is that way. Like when you have somebody that is in value alignment with you, they're in value alignment with what your firm's trying to accomplish. Like you are working your butt off to just think of every new way you could surprise and delight that person for the rest of your time. And so it doesn't even feel like work. And when you have somebody that doesn't value you, it just feels like just this grind every day. And so I think there's a big opportunity for us to think through like who is the right avatar for our business. And for me, I've said this before, like in Cincinnati, Ohio, they go to church, drink beer, swear a little, and want to get the most out of life, and tend to have a couple million bucks or more. We have fun together, and they love their family. They're deep. They like to read. They're intellectually curious. And when you find that person, we know we're just going to have fun with that person, and the relationship isn't going to feel like work.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, and by the way, I want to mention your podcast. I believe you had Bill Perkins on there, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, and for everybody, what's the name of your podcast?
The name of my podcast is Life, Money, and Living Well. And the Bill Perkins episode, let me get that up. The Bill Perkins episode is episode, it was about a year and a half ago. It is episode number, look at that. You realize how many of these you make. The episode came out in May of 2022. It was that episode. So it's about the fifth or sixth episode we did. And Bill was phenomenal. So again, that might also be a way you don't want to read the entire book. Hopefully we did a good job summarizing the book on that podcast.
Yeah, so life, money, and living well. It's a great podcast for everybody. Go check it out. There's a lot of other good episodes too. And you made me think of something a minute ago, Ben, when you talked about somebody that can't keep a person on their team. Yeah, that's an indicator. Like, well, that may not be a good match. And so that makes me think about when you're partnering with somebody, and let's say they have four or five team members. Do you evaluate that as part of the deal, so to speak, or how does that work?
We have not done as good of a job as we want to in buy-in from every single team member before our mergers. And so that's something we're actually working on right now. I mean, we've done talent assessments. We've asked the entrepreneur about their team. But we found that one area we can improve is me specifically spending time with their individual team members, sharing the vision before the merger, because it is a game of telephone. I say one thing, and then they say one thing to the team, and the team's a little bit confused on the vision. And it's amazing. Nothing creates a lack of inspiration as much as a lack of clarity. Like when people don't know what you're going, where you're going, the Bible says, without vision, the people perish. And there's just a lot of truth in that statement that when people don't know where the car is going, it's hard to be inspired by that. And so we've done a pretty good job of analyzing talent, but not that great of a job on vision clarity before the mergers happen. And that's something we're actively working on right now. I think one thing about podcasts that I find when I listen is I try to say, like, if we're doing something great, I want to say that we're doing it great, but if like we're still working something out, I always find it frustrating when I listen to a podcast. It's like, well, it seems like everybody on these episodes has got everything figured out. And so that's something that like we just missed 2 weeks ago, and we're working to get better on.
Dude, that's awesome. I mean, it's true, right? I've listened to podcasts or seen talks, and somebody will say, "We've never lost a client." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm tuning you out, dude. That is not true." So yeah, it's good to like say, "Hey, this is a work in progress," and that speaks to your, constant learning and evolution and things you can't learn until you're doing this stuff, right? It's something you figured out because you've been working through these things. And you've got to be good at change management, right? Because I think with the game of telephone, people are like, "Why are we changing? It seems scary. I don't know why we're doing this." But now you're finding ways to smooth that out and calm their anxiety, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is that to make any change, you have to have all of these check boxes. You have to have processes. You have to have systems. But you have to remember, like, the people side don't work inside of a checklist. The people side re require conversations. They require check-ins. It's messy, and so I think you can't out-systematize relationships. And so I think, like, in every business and in every industry, we have to remember that, like, when you're doing change, when you have change management, when you have transactions, when you have acquisitions, when you have periods of growth, you need to have checklist people on in your firm, but you also need to make sure that somebody is checking in on the humans, because checklists don't inspire anybody, at the end of the day. They're needed, or else everything falls apart, but you need to have both.
That makes sense, right? It's like you have people around you with different strengths and different skills to keep us all moving in the same direction, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I want to go back to the thing you said about trust. I think it's so true. It's like you're having to, and what does that do for someone's psyche if it's like, "Oh, I got to prove to Ben that I'm worthy, that I'm a good, I'm a good whatever provider, whatever the thing." So how does a person feel when they're doing that as opposed to with the other ones? Is it just they just know they're getting value? You don't have to keep telling them.
You mean in our mergers? Is that what you're
No,
asking
I'm thinking
about?
more about the clients because I was thinking about the example where you said, "Hey, I've got to go for certain clients. It's not a good fit. Maybe we shouldn't have brought them on, and we're out here trying to prove all the great things we did, and like, look, we're worthy. We're worthy." I'm just like, that probably doesn't feel good psychologically.
No, it doesn't. And I think, like, I mean, I think everything comes back to the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. And I think there's even an 80-20 rule. Like, there's an 80-20 rule on money. Like 80% of your 20% of your clients will generate 80% of your revenue. But there's a Pareto principle on frustration. Like, 20% of your clients will generate 80% of your frustration, right? It's like, when you have, like, these truths that are just, they transcend money, they're everything. And so I think the psyche sometimes is like, you'll have a couple clients that are just so hard that you start thinking, well, it's all of them. And you just realize, like, how much real estate you're giving these people in your mind. I mean, they're living, like people say, rent free in your mind. You realize how often and how often they're dominating your thoughts when you have, like, 80, 90% of your life is phenomenal, and you're giving these people permission to make you feel bad, and they're actually stealing it from all the people that are being low maintenance. You know what I mean? They're actually taking that time and energy that you would have to give to the great clients. And for us, we have phenomenal clients that live well. It's not 20%, it's maybe 2%. But I do think you can even let that 2% feel like it's a lot. And sometimes you have to have, tough conversations. I had one a couple of years ago with a client and said, "You're violating our culture. We're nice people. We work our butts off for you. We mutually value each other, and you're not treating my team in a way that is honoring to them. And so we have one of two paths. You can change, or you can find a new firm." Long pause. It was Christmas Eve, and he was being mean on Christmas Eve. Who's mean on
Gosh.
Christmas Eve? But long pause, and he said, "You're right. I'm sorry." And it's amazing what the relationship's been like since, So sometimes it just takes a little bit of courage at the right moment.
That's such a great example. And, to go back to something you said earlier, which is you're constantly seeking feedback. You're constantly putting yourself in the client's shoes. You're making sure that you're providing the things that they want and that they need. And so when someone is making you feel otherwise, it might be that they just shouldn't have been a client ever and that they need to go. Or you're saying, look, this is how we operate here. And there's a certain kind of person who, when you call them out, they respect you more. And it sounds like with that person, like the relationship's better now, right? That's a great example of conflict that you didn't want to do paid off.
Yeah, and I think the hard part about conflict is you don't know how it's going to go ahead of time. So that story could have just as easily gone the other way, but you had to be okay with like I'm okay with any outcome. I'm definitely okay with you changing, and I'm definitely okay with you not being a client if you're going to treat my team this way. I'm okay with either outcome. I'm just not okay with the outcome as it's going now, you know.
Well, and you're looking out for the team too, right? I know they would appreciate that. It's like, hey, this is driving us crazy. You're protecting them, and that pays a lot of dividends, I think.
When, and you'd be amazed too by like we had two client communications today where the people were over the moon. They're in Florida. They're like, we're loving retirement. They just gotten off the pickleball court. They were going to happy hour tonight. And they were like over the moon on the work we've done and what it's allowed them to do. And you're like, I need that message in my head.
Yeah.
Because the funny thing is you can provide the exact same work for somebody that's just a negative person, and they don't think it's as good, and so it's amazing. It's amazing how many positive people there are, and I want to surround myself with positive people. I saw, I don't know if you know Donald Miller or not. He's written a couple books. He's got a great company called StoryBrand, but I saw a quote the
Yeah.
other day. He said, "Nothing will cost you more in life than a predetermined belief that things aren't going to work out."
Oh.
And the thought of just being around positive people and what that does for your psyche and avoiding the people that just think nothing's ever going to work out, the sky is always falling, I think is just a powerful thing.
It's so true, right? It's like that the idea of where who you spend your time with is in the books you read, and Blinkist is getting you through those quickly. That determines what your life's going to be like, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, just a couple of things as we wrap up. Like when you think about like the world that you're in and how you think outside it, like what are some of the insights that you've noticed just in terms of how when you go back into, let's say, a conversation that is more inside the box with the outside perspective when you come back inside, if that makes sense. Like how does that help you when you're back in your business after you've been listening to others that have different kinds of businesses?
You know, I think there's a reason you called this podcast 10X, right? I have a different program for advisors called 10X. We both clearly like the name 10X. Grant Cardone likes the name 10X. But our friend that wrote the books 10X is easier than 2X. Who wrote that again?
Oh, Dan Sullivan and Ben Hardy.
Right. So I do think that sometimes and I'm sure you've talked about this in your podcast before, but I think sometimes in life, we spend too much time thinking about the 2X ideas. If everybody just works a little bit harder and, everybody gets a little bit better on this one thing and we're a little bit more efficient and we cut these costs and we tend to think incremental because I think that's the way we were taught. And I also think that's the way you survive in the beginning of your business. But I think the thought of thinking 10X is, and I love that this podcast is called 10X, causes you to think totally different things. Like if you said, how am I going to 2X your business? And you made that list. And then you made the list of how am I going to 10X my business? And you made that list. And let's say you gave yourself a 2 or 3 year time frame. Those lists are very different. Incremental strategies don't work for 10X. And I think the interesting thing about thinking 10X is it forces you to think different thoughts than you would think if you were thinking 2X. And I think the great thing about, I blinked that book. I didn't actually read that book. So I'm sure there was all kinds of things I missed. But I think the interesting thing about thinking 10x, I also think it's more fun. Like, I don't actually think it's that fun to think 2x. You know, I'm not even good at those things. It's like a and efficiency isn't inspiring. And so I think 10x could be, depending on the industry you're in, it could be reinventing the products or services you're selling. It could be going after a different niche. It could be going after a different target market. It could be mergers and acquisitions. It could be a million different things. But I think as business owners, giving ourselves permission to think 10x every once in a while may change the business model and the business you're in. So that would be one of the things that's encouraged me to think different.
Well, you've done that, man. You've transformed countless lives from clients and colleagues and, friends around the world. And so, as I put together what you said, a long time ago, well, not a long time ago, earlier, you said, I don't want to be thinking how many payrolls before we run out of cash, right? I've had that thought too. And, small thinking can be contagious. So it sounds like you surround yourself with big thinking, visionary people to get yourself out of that. If you find yourself in that kind of mode for a second, you're like, nope, that was in survival mode, and now I'm in 10x mode.
Absolutely. And I think one of the I'm in one industry study group and one non-industry study group. And I think, when you're insecure, you want to be the most successful person in the room, right? Like you want to be like the biggest fish in the room. But I want to be like I want to be the least successful people in the room because I'm gonna learn from those people. And so in every I'm in a CEO forum. And I'm in a industry study group, and I am by far the biggest loser in every room. And you're like, it's like amazing when you think like it takes the pressure off because it's like I can learn so much from these people. And it is funny, like if you're joining something, I would encourage people that are listening. Number one, if you're not in an industry or non-industry study group, so much you can learn. And also look for ones where you're going to be the smallest fish because you're going to like, we had one group where I shared my goals, and then like the next guy shared his goals, and they were like 100 times bigger than mine. I'm like, I wish I had gone second. Like I wanted to crawl into a hole. But it's fun to just hang out with people that think different, think bigger, and have been where you've been before already, and you can learn from them. So I found that to be a great way to think bigger for me personally.
Definitely, man. Well, it's inspiring and it's been great having you on today. Is anything else you want to share just as we wrap up?
No, we talked a lot about abundance, and I just want to thank you. I think you are one of the people in my life that has a huge abundance in the way you've lived and the way you've brought me into your sphere. I've really enjoyed getting to know you and getting to learn from you too.
Likewise, man. Thank you. Yeah, abundance is great. Feels a lot better than scarcity. And I appreciate you sharing your wisdom and abundance with all of us today, man. And until next time, everybody.